Stay tuned for a Juno Afternoon. We're going to learn about taking tours out at the Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute. We'll be talking with Donna Cotati about a portrait painting workshop next week in Haines. And we'll find out about next month's Juno Roller Girls fundraiser, the Juno Roller Girls Lip Sync Bout. And we'll hear about other art happenings in Juno during Arts Up. That's Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more this afternoon on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission has released its long-awaited final report. It comes after 5 years. Stories were shared by some 7,000 survivors of the country's Indian residential schools. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
Although the report was released last week, the Commission's chairman, Justice Murray Sinclair, had been speaking about it for days before. He said the difficult and almost incomprehensible stories from survivors should help set the course for future action, especially in education. 150,000 First Nations, Inuit, and Métis children were forcibly taken from their homes and sent to residential schools. Many were 5 or 6 years old. The aim was to help assimilate them into white culture. The schools were run by churches and funded by the Government of Canada from the mid-1800s to the late 1900s. It's estimated that as many as 6,000 children died, many buried in unmarked graves. The schools are also blamed for the loss of Native culture and language and for the many social problems that plague Aboriginal communities today. Here's some of what Justice Sinclair had to say.
As commissioners, we have concluded that cultural genocide is probably the best description of what went on here. But more importantly, that if anybody tried to do this today, they would easily be subject to a prosecution under the Genocide Convention in a world court.
Hundreds of residential school survivors gathered in Ottawa last week for the release of the final report. Sinclair told them that apologies and listening to their painful stories are only a beginning. The next step is reconciliation, and for that he's calling for the restarting of the relationship between Aboriginal people and the rest of the country. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The idea to ban instant horse racing terminals in Idaho is not dead. The Coeur d'Alene tribe supports the ban, yet as Steve Jackson reports, the governor vetoed the bill.
In the recently completed Idaho legislative session, lawmakers passed a bill that banned controversial instant horse racing machines. Critics felt they were too much like slot machines, which are banned in the state. But Governor Butch Otter decided to veto that legislation. Now the Coeur d'Alene tribe is asking the Idaho Supreme Court to invalidate the veto because the governor didn't complete it within the required 5-day time span. Deborah Ferguson is an attorney representing the tribe who says the cutoff date was Saturday, April the 4th, but Otter didn't sign it until Monday, April the 6th.
The concern is the legislature repealed the instant racing machines and did so by a supermajority of both the House and the Senate. So I think that being the case, and that being the intent of the legislature, Secretary of State Denny needs to put this law on the Idaho books.
The Idaho Supreme Court has responded by setting a briefing schedule in the case. The Idaho Secretary of State has been ordered to file his response to the tribe's court challenge by the end of next week. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
Congress adopted legislation recently to create a commission on Native American children, according to the bill sponsor, U.S. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski. The 11-member commission will recommend ways to combine and coordinate federal programs and funding for Alaska Native American Indian and Native Hawaiian children. The commission is named in honor of Dr. Walter Sobolev, a Tlingit elder from Southeast Alaska who promoted cultural education, and Alice Spotted Bear, former chairwoman of the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation. Murkowski says Walter Sobolev lived his life by a simple motto, take care of the old person you're to become. But she said that must begin as early as possible. Murkowski says the commission's aim is to more effectively address issues affecting Native children, such as poverty, domestic violence, and substance abuse. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in American Indians 50 and over. For yourself, your family, and our community, get screened. info@AmericanIndianCancer.org.
The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Good afternoon and welcome to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Laurie Scandling, joined in the studio by producer Jeff Brown. Our first guests in this segment of the show include Julie Spiegel of the Public Affairs Office of the NOAA Fisheries Service here in Juneau, her colleague Kate Brogan, which is welcome, Kate, visiting. She is also a public affairs officer with NOAA, and she is on a detail to Alaska, her first time in the very great 49th state. We're glad to have you here. And Ralph Steve, who is the coordinator of outreach, education, and science on a sphere. Okay, I have to start with science on a sphere first, because I picture like a hot dog on a stick. I don't know why. So help me out. What is science on a sphere, Ralph?
It was a mechanism developed by NOAA, and there's about 109 of them. And I say about, they keep adding new ones. And it's a 6-foot in diameter screen that's have images projected from four different angles. So it can show you Earth dynamics of the weather, for example, or tectonic plate movements or ocean currents, those kinds of things we can demonstrate on there in a dark room, like a theater environment, and you don't see the strings or the wires that hold it up, so it looks like you're looking at the Earth from out in orbit somewhere.
It's magic.
It's science.
So we are talking about the ability for the public to take tours out at that very beautiful facility, the Ted Stevens Marine Research Center at Lena Point. Tell us a little bit about what the public should know if they'd like to take a tour and some of the things that they would have the opportunity to see and do. It sounds like science on a sphere is one of those things.
Yeah, we conclude our afternoon together with the science on a sphere presentation. It runs about 25 minutes. But every day, this is our sixth summer doing this, every day at 1 o'clock, Monday through Friday, we do a tour through the laboratories and some of the office sections also, talking about the history of fisheries in Alaska and in the world in general. I can take 15 people. In fact, I had 15 today on a tour each day. It says on a couple of recordings that first come, first serve, but it does help to call and make a reservation as we get further into the summer. There's a fair demand now for people coming back who we don't have any folks that come in off the cruise ships or anything, but they're Juneau population folks that have company or relatives in town, and they come back out and see that. The tour lasts about 55 minutes, and then we do the science on a sphere. And the program I'm showing so far this summer is talking about the other things NOAA does besides fisheries, because we've always already talked about that for about an hour on a tour. But we talk about the other things NOAA does for the American public, like the Weather Forecasting Service and the Tsunami Warning Services, and learning about the Department of Commerce's ocean currents, maps, and that kind of stuff, to help people understand that NOAA gets often overlooked as far as how important it is in our everyday life, but it touches each and every one of us every single day.
Thank you, Ralph. Are the tours free?
I often tell people when they ask that question, well, you've already paid your income tax, so no, they're not free, but you don't have to pay anything in addition when you come out to Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute. They're free in that regard.
Well, thank you for saying that, because it is a public institution. It belongs to all of us as a public service center as part of our U.S. government. So, Julie, talk a little bit about this idea of providing tours at government centers like this. Whose idea was this? Why do you do it?
Well, Lori, it's kind of funny. I've had people, say, oh, I didn't know I was allowed to go into that scary-looking government building out there. I thought I would get in trouble, but it really is. The Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute is open to the public. As soon as you go into the door, there's this beautiful aquarium. And it's we want the public to know what we're doing. We want them to know what science we're doing and understand what we're doing, because then there's more support for the work that we do, and they understand the role that the government has. And in this particular case with our agency, our role is managing the fisheries and protecting marine mammals mostly.
If I were to be on the tour, what's something I would see? Ralph mentioned you're going to see some of the labs. What would that include? Is it people with, not to be facetious, but white coats on, plastic gloves, with smolt in a bin? Or I happen to mention that I was visiting the hatchery this week. So I'm kind of, that's in my head. What might I see out at the center there?
Oh, there's no telling what you might see. There is a necropsy lab. There's also a room with a touch tank. There are scientists who are working with fish and fish species. There's genetic testing. I understand some of the labs can be quite odoriferous because the scientists are working on fish.
Sure.
So there's quite a lot to see.
Kate, you're visiting from Maryland. This is your first visit to Alaska. Tell us a little bit about your first impressions in terms of what are we doing up here that you think might be a good model for elsewhere, or are the tours we do or in that kind of outreach very typical for NOAA?
Well, I know where I work in Silver Spring has a Science on the Sphere, and the NOAA headquarters office offers it's called a Gateway to NOAA in Silver Spring. So we have the Gateway to NOAA display that's open to the public out in Maryland every weekday. So we do similar things where we try to engage the public and offer opportunities for members of the public and school groups to come by and see the kind of work that we're doing. And we also have, because it's NOAA's headquarters, we have representatives from the Weather Service and NOAA Fisheries and NOAA's National Ocean Service available to speak to members of the public about all the different types of work that NOAA is doing at different times of the year. We have open houses and volunteer days. So we try to engage with the public in models that are similar to what Julie and Ralph are talking about. But I think this is a really unique way for people in Alaska and people in Juneau to see kind of the special things that are happening here at the Ted Stevens Research Institute. I think some of the stuff you're going to see here are things that you're never going to see anywhere else in the world, right? The species and the marine mammals are unique to Alaska, and it's just a very exciting opportunity.
Can you tell me one or two things you've seen here that were kind of mind-blowing and that you might not have imagined having not been to Alaska before?
Yeah, so last weekend I went on the Tracy Arm tour, the glacier tour, and I saw black bears and I saw harbor seals, and I've never seen any of those before. I was glad I was on a boat when I saw the black bears, but both of those were completely mind-blowing. I'm from New Jersey and North Carolina, and those were...
They have black bears in both those states.
But they were definitely new to me.
Well, I should say you're beaming. We're on radio, so I should describe how you're acting right
now.
They
were awesome.
It's so fun to hear from somebody who is visiting our state for the first time. Julie, is there funding to continue the tours all year, or is this just a summertime opportunity? Tell us a little bit about the public outreach program and if it's all year round and if there are any other components the public should know about.
Right. So we typically do offer these tours every summer. That's really the height of the tourist season when a lot of people have visitors. So we offer the tours every day during the summer. During the rest of the year, Ralph offers tours on an appointment basis. So if you give him a call, you could probably arrange to have a tour other than the summer season.
And are there other outreach efforts, for example, going into a classroom with some samples from the lab or a multimedia show of any sort, for example?
Right. So every year, the folks out at the lab do a Sea Week, and this is a week where they invite the school kids from the Juneau area to come in and learn about marine science. And they have a lot of structured activities to help them learn about science, and it's a really good event. We've had students that have come to Sea Week that have grown up and, you know, come back and work for NOAA because it was so inspiring to them.
I have met students like that and who have said that Sea Week was life-changing for them. Ralph, is there a particular age group that can best benefit from the tour? Meaning, is there an age that might be too young to be patient for an hour-plus tour?
Sure. There's one thing I want to make clear. I'm not the outreach coordinator. I'm an outreach educator.
Okay.
And in regard to the age for the tours, we advertise it's for an audience 16 years of age and older. We do things for students during the winter months that are designed for students, and not just the Sea Week. As far as the Science in the Sphere, teachers will call and ask for us to prepare a Science in the Sphere program specific to their curriculum. So if they're studying, for example, the moon, I can create a program specifically for that. And you ask going out in the schools, I'll go out the day before they come to NOAA and spend some time in their classroom prepping them for what they're going to be seeing. Then they come out to NOAA the following day, and then I go back out to their school as a follow-up the day after. That's new. We did a pilot program with that last year, and we had schools like Auk Bay, and the middle schools took advantage of that. But we want to expand that further because the capability of this mechanism goes far beyond just adults. But the tours themselves are designed for adults primarily.
That's good to know. And it's not just about fish. I'm glad you mentioned the moon and that each of you specified that NOAA does a number of other things. And, of course, Southeast Alaska, we're focused on the weather all the time. And for boaters and fishers and other folks who are on the coast, that is a huge service that is very, very important to our region. What's the phone number that they should call, Ralph? You said it's helpful if people call ahead and make sure there's a spot.
Yeah, it guarantees them not taking a wasted trip out there, but it's 789-6050. That's 789-6050.
And the same number for the school year program
as
well?
Yes, and they can leave a message for me. I don't work a full day, but I'm out there usually 5 to 6 hours a day. But leave a message, and that's probably going to be good enough to get on the tour, and I'll call back once I do arrive at work.
Well, it sounds like a lot of exciting opportunities out at the NOAA Lab, as we call it, and that's the Ted Stevens Marine Research Center, and it's on Lena Loop Road, and it has a beautiful setting there. I know I've been to some meetings and conferences, and it's you can just have a picnic outside there. It's that inviting.
It's open to the public. You're right.
Depending on the weather.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, it was beautiful there when I left, by the way.
Oh,
of course, it's always nicer out the road. We've been talking with Julie Spiegel, who's with Public Affairs of NOAA Fisheries, Kate Brogan, her colleague, who's visiting from Silver Spring, Maryland, and Ralph Steves, who is the outreach educator and presents science in a sphere, not on a sphere.
Actually, it's on a sphere.
Okay. I was thinking maybe I'd heard that incorrectly. That's all out at the NOAA Lab, and you can take a free tour, 1 p.m., Monday through Friday, each business day. It runs about 55 minutes, plus an additional opportunity to learn and see the mechanism called science on a sphere. Good to call ahead at 789-6050. Did we cover it?
You sure did. Thank you, Lori.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Don't fish for me in Turkey.
And welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. Lori Scandling with you. We're going to chat with Donna Cattotti of Haynes about a portrait painting workshop that will be held there next week. Welcome, Donna. I hear there's just one slot left.
That's right.
Well, tell us a little bit about what happens there. Maybe portrait painting is self-explanatory, but tell us why this is a unique workshop and why you might convince somebody that it's for them.
Okay. For one thing, it's an opportunity that we don't get in Alaska very often. Let me tell you just a little bit about Studio Incommunity. They are a four-year nonprofit school in Philadelphia, a school for contemporary realism, started by Nelson and Leona Shanks. Nelson Shanks is an amazing painter who has painted the popes and the presidents and hippie girls as well. You know, he paints all kinds of subjects, but he's an amazing painter. And he has trained all the different teachers that are at that school currently. And it's a school that teaches classical skills. So the first-year students do a lot with drawing and value, black and white and understanding anatomy, this and that. And they go on the second year with the color studies and work all the way up into, just figure, portrait, and that sort of thing. And so a few years ago, I happened to be at the Portrait Society Conference in Philadelphia, and I learned of this school and immediately signed up to go there the next summer. I've been two summers now to the Advanced Portrait Figure Workshops, and they have a program called In Your Town. And they send one of their instructors to various places to do these workshops, and I finagled and was lucky enough to convince them to come to Haynes, Alaska for a portrait workshop. The teacher is going to be Lee Coley White, and she's an amazing painter herself, and she's coming all the way from back east to help us all improve our skills.
Donna, can you please repeat the name of the school?
Studio Incommunity. Incommunity is an Italian word that means moving forward. And, you know, for a long time, the realist art was sort of poo-pooed in favor of the avant-garde, but it's really made a strong comeback, and there are currently any number of atelier schools around the country and in Florence and various places that are opening up that are teaching the classical skills once again. Because if you have those classical skills, those basic skills, then you can do anything, you know, and you're not limited by your lack of skill. I know just from my own personal experience, I didn't really like Picasso's work, but when I saw that he could draw classically, that he had been trained classically, it changed my opinion of what he did in his abstract sense, you know.
Who should be thinking about this workshop? Would somebody need to already be a successful artist in some genre?
No. You know, when I asked, can we accept people who haven't worked in oils, you know, they told me that they would hope that the students have some drawing skills, because the basis of every good painting is being able to, you know, have a certain amount of drawing skills. But this particular class in Haynes this week is going to cover all different levels. I'm a professional. Several others are professionals. But there are also some people that are really beginners. And so she's going to be doing very individualized instruction. And it starts out, you know, because Nelson trained everybody that teaches there, they all start out with the same approach. Now, I've watched five and six of them demonstrating at once, and, of course, they end up with five or six very different paintings. But they always start out very gestural. One of the comments one of the teachers made recently was, here's the model posing, right? We were doing full figures. And if you could only draw one line to indicate this model, what would that one line be? Don't think about it. Just put it down there. If you could draw a second line, what would that line be? So they start out very loose and very gestural and then work towards the likeness and changing. So it starts out with really basic skills. You define, they use very strong light, so it's very clear, the light and shadow. So you'll draw the shape. So instead of drawing, say, the line of the nose, what is that shape of the shadow that's indicating the nose? And so you're drawing these shapes, and you're doing your shadow side in a brown. That's called grisaille. Then you mix up some color for your kind of a middle skin tone, and they always say exaggerate the color in the light. So all these people at Incommunity, they work more along the color sense, is more along the lines of the Impressionists, with very bold, bright colors, as opposed to, say, tonal paintings. I know Florence Academy, they work with a limited palette, and the paintings, while equally beautiful, they're more tonal in quality. So anyway, you mix up your skin tone paint, and you know, so that's called a closed grisaille when you put that tone in. Then you start breaking down the values a little bit. Then there will be a color study. So the first few days of the workshop, we're going to have two different models, the first 2 days, and Lee will be demonstrating, but we will all be practicing our basic skills. And so that open grisaille with just the brown paint, you know, we will do very gesturally, we'll do the model, and in within 10 or 15 minutes, she's going to, you take your turpentine rag, you erase it out, let's do another one. So you get that practice. And then, you know, we work into some longer stuff, and then you work into doing the color studies. And on the color study, they'll say, don't worry if the drawing's right. We're just testing the colors. We're working on that. And so we'll do some of that. And then the last 3 days of this workshop, Tim Ackerman is going to pose in his regalia, all of which he has made for himself. Tim is Klingit, lives here in Haines. And we will be doing a 3-day long pose of him, and I'm sure there'll be a color study involved at the beginning of the process. And
what are the total numbers of days, Dawn? It sounds like it's, what, 5 days?
It's 5 days. We'll be painting from 9 o'clock till noon, take a lunch break, and then paint again from 1 until 4.
And this
and
begins...
the model will be posing all that. You know, they get a break every 20 minutes. and then on Tuesday night and Wednesday night, Lee is going to be demonstrating at the Sheldon Museum from 6 until 9 p.m., and Lonnie Hotch, who just received the Governor's Award for the Volunteer of the Year for the Klukwan Cultural Center that she's getting going up there in Klukwan, she's going to be modeling in her regalia while Lee demonstrates painting, and it's open to the public, no charge. Anybody can come and watch, and you can come and go if somebody is interested but they don't have 3 hours, that's fine. They can come watch for half an hour, whatever, you know, suits them. Just to kind of see what's going on, and then those of us who are the students in the class, I'm sure, are going to want to sit there and both nights and see the whole thing.
So it sounds like you have one slot left. What is the charge for the 5-day workshop, and what's the best contact if we have a listener interested in learning more about that?
Okay. It's $5.99 for the class. And that is a bargain, I can tell you, because I've just researched Lawrence Academy's $13.75 for a week. So this is a good deal for a week. And then you need all your supplies. The supply list is on the Studio Incaminati website, as is the registration. And so I can spell that, or they can call me. I'll give my number here, too. Or you can call Studio Incaminati. So it's a studio, S-T-U-D-I-O. And Incaminati is incaminati.org. So that's their website. And their phone number, you could register by phone, is 215-592-7910. Or if somebody needs more information or wants the local information, they're free to call me at 766-2707.
How many participants are you anticipating?
Well, we have 11 right now, and there's room for one more. Originally, we said we would take 20, but at this point, it's too late in the game to add another instructor. If you get over 12, you at least need a second model, and basically you kind of need a second instructor. So if we had had 20, they would have sent two instructors, and it's too late for that. So that they've decided that the cutoff is 12. Partly because that's really how many people, the most that you can fit around the model and still have everybody really be able to see.
Whose idea was it to include the posing of traditional peoples in their regalia? It sounds like a wonderful opportunity to capture something different in terms
yes.
of full-figure portraiture.
Yes. Actually, it was my idea, and this came about because when I was back in Philadelphia taking the advanced portrait figure class last summer and was talking to a couple of the instructors about it, I was trying to decide whether we should offer a still life class or a portrait class. And, you know, I kind of wanted to have a portrait class because that's my major interest these days. But I was a little bit worried that people would think, oh, I'm not a portrait painter. I can't paint a portrait. Well, if you do this class, it doesn't matter if you ever paint another portrait. Whatever you will learn will apply to your landscapes or your still lifes. It'll apply to anything. But so I was kind of thinking about this, though, and then I thought, well, why don't we make it a portrait with a still life, in the sense that, you know, the headdresses and the regalia is almost like painting a still life. So that was kind of a fun idea that I thought would intrigue people. And yeah.
Now, tell me a little bit. I assume people are responsible for their own lodging. And what about meals? Are they independent or are they part of the cost?
No, the cost is just for the workshop itself. So pretty much you're on your own. One of the gals that's taking the class does have a little coffee shop here, and she's going to supply us with coffee and pastries in the morning. And so that'll be real nice. And I am hosting a potluck Sunday night. If anybody comes over on the ferry Sunday, if this one more person happens to be from Juneau that signs up, let me know on my phone number there, because you're invited to a potluck. And we're going to have all the, you know, just have all the workshop participants and their families have a social hour ahead of time. And just also in addition to this, the Sheldon Museum, because that's where we were doing the demonstrations, they decided to host a portrait show. They have one room in the museum that's for art shows. And so we've got the workshop participants contributing a piece. The teacher has sent something out from back east. And we've got local artists participating, and also Alaskan members of the Portrait Society of America were invited to submit for that.
Well, it sounds like a varied program.
Yeah, so that show is going to open on Friday with a reception from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, kind of at the end of our workshop. And our workshop pieces will not be in that show. The teacher's demonstration piece will be in the show. But, you know, as far as all of us students, it's not – our workshop work is not going to be in the show, although most of the workshop participants are contributing to the show.
Well, Donna, thank you so much. We're talking with Donna Cotati, an artist in Haines, about an upcoming week-long artist workshop sponsored by the studio in Kaminati from Philadelphia. Lee Coley-White will be the instructor. The cost is $599 for the entire week. And there are a couple of contact numbers here if you'd like to learn more about the one available slot, and that is Donna at 766-2707, or the studio in Kaminati itself in Philadelphia at 215-592-7910. It sounds like a very inspiring week, Donna. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, and just one more thought. There is one other person in town that is taking the class who said she'd be happy to host somebody. So if the accommodations is the limiting factor for somebody, it needn't be.
Sounds like they should give you a call and learn more about that. And again, you can reach Donna in Haines, 766-2707. Thanks, Donna.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 11th of June, 2015. It's the birthday of the man who said, "I may not be a first-rate composer, but I am a first-class, second-rate composer." Richard Strauss, born in Munich in 1864, who gave us Don Juan, Don Quixote, the opera Salome, and many others. It was on this day, 1935, that listeners first heard FM radio, when the inventor Edwin Armstrong gave a demonstration of it in Alpine, New Jersey. It's the birthday of the novelist William Styron, born Newport News, Virginia, 1925, author of Sophie's Choice, The Confessions of Nat Turner, served in the Marine Corps, then went to New York, became an editor at McGraw-Hill. He was miserable there, managed to get himself fired, which left him free to write his first novel, Lie Down in Darkness, came out in 1951. It won awards, it won great reviews, he was compared to Faulkner, James Joyce. He moved to Europe, he married Rose Burgunder, a poet, became friends with James Jones, James Baldwin, George Plimpton, American writers living in Paris. They founded the Paris Review there. William Styron, who liked to write in the afternoons in longhand on yellow sheets of paper. He said, "I like to stay up late at night and get drunk and sleep late. The afternoon is the only time I have left, and I try to use it to the best advantage with a hangover." But in 1985, shortly after he turned 60, when he was in Paris to receive an award, William Styron stopped drinking and suddenly plummeted into severe suicidal depression, was hospitalized for over a year. It was the beginning of a long, long battle with mental illness, one which resulted in his memoir, Darkness Visible, a memoir of madness. And he spent the remaining years of his life as an advocate for mental health, but admitting that depression had sapped his writing. Here's a poem for today by Gavin Ewart, entitled Yorkshireman in Pub Gardens. As they sit there, happily drinking, their strokes, cancers, and so forth are not in their minds. Indeed, what earthly good would thinking about the future, which is death, do? Each summer finds beer in their hands in big pint glasses, and so their leisure passes. Perhaps the older ones allow some inkling into their thoughts, being hauled as a kid upstairs to bed, screaming for a teddy or a tinkling musical box against their will. Each Joe or Fred wants longer with the life and lasses, and so their time passes. Second childhood, and come in number 80, shouts inexorably the man in charge of the boating pool. When you're called, you must go, matey, so don't complain. Keep it all calm and cool. There's masses of time yet, masses, masses. And so their life passes. Yorkshireman in Pub Gardens, a poem by Gavin Ewart, from his selected poems, published by New Directions and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. And by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Pre-registration for Only Fools Run at Midnight closes today at 5 p.m. Register now at KTOO.org for this 5K or 1 mile walk, wheel, or run to guarantee your Fool's Run t-shirt and show your support for Southeast Alaska Independent Living and Public Media in Juneau. You can register in person at both First Bank and JRC Alaska Club locations, Pavitt Health, Nugget Alaskan Outfitters, the sale office, or the KTOO office. Or you can register online right now at KTOO.org.
Programming support comes from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Laurie Scandling. Taking a quick look at the weather just to let you know, in the next 24 hours, we'll be seeing more of what we experienced today, scattered showers, until Friday night, when that decreases to just a chance of rain, and then Saturday, decreasing clouds and warmer with highs around 67. So it looks like the weekend will clear up a bit. By the time we hit Saturday evening through Monday night, we will see highs around 75 degrees. Speaking of the weekend, there's lots coming up this weekend and in the coming week, and we're going to be chatting with the new executive assistant at the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, Hillary Hinnan. Welcome, Hillary. As usual, there's a list a mile long of things to do in Juneau. So tell us what's coming up in the next week. First, let's talk a little bit about Pride Week. It's all week, is that right?
Pride Week is all week. The kickoff is on Friday at the Hangar Ballroom. And then there's a glitz dance and drag show.
Is that Friday night as well?
That is Saturday night.
Okay.
And that's actually all ages.
And where will that be?
That's at the Rockwell Ballroom.
Okay. And what time does that start?
Let's see here. That starts at 8 p.m.
And what's the kickoff about tomorrow night at the Hangar Ballroom?
I think it's like a meet and greet.
Oh, and is there a time set for that?
There certainly is. It's at 7 p.m.
Great. Another thing we were talking about that may be of general interest is your Arts Roundtable. Tell us a little bit about that and what the topic is this week.
Yeah, our Arts Roundtable is really wonderful. So any artist or really anybody who's interested is invited, and we just get together and talk about a specific topic every month. This month it's actually packaging and shipping your artwork, which is there's a lot more to it than you'd think. A lot of do's and don'ts.
And does that typically attract gallery folks, or do just everyday folks who might just have an interest in art show up for those kind of things?
We get a lot of gallery folks, but it would be great to get even more artists.
General public and the artists.
Interested.
Where will the meeting be this week? I know it's on Thursday. Where are you going to have it this next Thursday?
That will be, let's see, it's not tomorrow. Oh, I'm sorry. It's on Thursday, and it'll be at the boardroom in the Senate building.
So a week from today, the new workspace called the boardroom in the Senate building downtown.
That's right.
Above the Artist Co-op Gallery.
That's right.
Downtown.
Yeah.
So what else is happening around our busy community?
Well, tomorrow is another Food Truck Friday, which is very exciting for us at the Jack. It's food, music, and fun, even when it's nice and rainy. We've got lots of tents.
I went last week, and the food was excellent. Tell us about the music that will be happening inside.
We will be having Flautations. They're a four-piece classical flute group, which sounds wonderful. And Soul Review will also be playing. They've been practicing at the Jack today, and it's so nice.
And what time do the festivities begin with Food Truck Fridays and the music inside?
Music starts at 5:30. You could get there at 5 o'clock, get some food, grab a seat.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be lots of vendors there, too. Mabel McKinley, Full Cup Studios. Jane Edwards is actually making cookies from the Fiddlehood Cookbook.
Classic.
I know, very exciting.
Speaking of music, I know the symphony has some goings-on. Tell us what's happening in that arena.
Yeah, it's their summer pop series with conductor Dwayne Corbin. And that's going on Saturday at 8 p.m. and Sunday at 3 p.m. at JDHS.
Both shows at JDHS.
That's correct.
Okay. What else is happening around town?
Let's see.
And just to let folks know, of course, they can find a full listing not only of arts,
mm-hmm.
but virtually every event in Juneau is listed on the JAHC.org website. It's quite a comprehensive listing.
Yeah, it is. It's got so much stuff going on. There's always something to do.
There is.
Especially when it's raining. Let's see. Saturday, Family Day at the Lake. That should be fun, rain or shine. Music and Poetry is happening at McFeeters Hall at 8 p.m. on Saturday. And Lemonade Day Alaska is happening on Saturday the 13th also. Support your Alaska's future entrepreneurs. It's kind of nice.
And is that an ad hoc thing, or is that organized somewhere?
It's organized through lemonadeday.org.
That's a good answer.
Yeah. On Sunday, there's going to be the Kids Rhubarb and Garden Party at the Douglas Community Garden at 10:30 a.m. They're going to learn how to make their own plots and harvest rhubarb.
So that's aimed at kids, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
10:30 on Sunday, Douglas Community Garden.
That's right. And then in the next week, there's lots of youth art classes going on still, fine arts camp, as well as lots of really great art classes going on at the Canvas. And there's also youth football skills camp at Thunder Mountain. Cool stuff.
Good time to be a kid.
I think so. And, yeah, let's see. Oh, and there's also some shows going on at the Gold Town Nick.
Tell us about that.
There is a Western called Slow West. It looks pretty cool. And there's also a movie called Moose.
I think that was produced by an Alaskan. I was looking at the poster the other
indeed.
Day, and it looks pretty irresistible.
Filmed in Alaska with Alaskan actors, funded by Alaskan people. And it's about a half man, half moose, moosetar that's terrorizing the town.
I think I've met a couple people like that. Have you?
I think so.
Well, I'm talking with Hillary Hinnon. We're talking about upcoming arts and other events here in Juneau. For example, we have symphony performances this weekend. There's an arts roundtable a week from today on Thursday. The topic is packing and shipping art. as Hillary said, there's way more to that than might be apparent on the surface. We live a far, far away from many people, and we want that artwork to get there safely. The Fools Run at Midnight starts at 11:59 p.m. on Saturday. And Hillary, does it say there where people should meet for that? Where does that start?
That's at Centennial Hall.
Okay, so right downtown, and that benefits KTOO and the other public media outlets here, as well as SAIL. We've got Day at the Lake from 10 to 3 at Twin Lakes. And, of course, Fun Fridays across the street here at the Jack with food and music. You can come as early as 5 o'clock, music starting at 5:30. And a lot of that is free and family-oriented as well. So, Hillary, for more information, why don't you give us the website and a phone number as well?
Sure. Yeah, our website is jahc.org, and our phone number is 586-2787.
Did we miss anything?
I don't think so.
All right, check the website. Lots happening in Juneau, as usual. Hillary, thanks for dropping by.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Because many woodpeckers have pointed tongues, it was once assumed that certain ones harpoon their prey. But what they actually do is more complex. Like a safe cracker in a movie, birds like the hairy woodpecker use a killer combination of sensitivity and force. First, as it scales a tree trunk, the hairy woodpecker taps lightly here and there. A telltale sign, just the right resonance, lets it know there's a tunnel underneath. And where there's a tunnel, there's most likely a tunneler, a wood-boring insect. Next, the woodpecker chisels a small opening and slides its long tongue down the insect's tunnel. The tongue tip likely features taste and touch organs that sense when it hits the bullseye. But how do you get the prey out? Whether beetle, ant, or grub, it's by now most likely braced itself inside the tree. The woodpecker's tongue is more than up to the job. Its tip is coated with sticky saliva, has backward-facing barbs, and can even wrap itself around the prey. So, once it's found its mark, there's no resisting its force, and the prey is done for. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
My name is Bruce Van Dusen. I am the director at Polaris House. Every day I see people suffering with the health effects of tobacco use. Many will die of tobacco-related disease. My message as a behavioral health provider is this: smoking has no mental health benefits, and stopping smoking is therapeutic. Talk to a doctor or pharmacist about quitting tobacco, or call Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW. You can succeed.
Brought to you by the Partnership for a Tobacco-Free Southeast and Search.
We'll be right back.
glad you're with us this afternoon on Juno Afternoon. Lori Scandling here with Jeff Brown, our producer, in the studio as well. We want to remind you that tonight at 7 o'clock, the Juno World Affairs Council presents Arresting Climate Change, Transforming the World's Largest Industry, with our own local Bill Leedy. Bill Leedy is an electrical engineer, businessman, and philanthropist. He has co-authored more than 20 research papers on renewable energy and alternatives to electricity. That's 7 o'clock tonight with the World Affairs Council on KTOO News. Looking ahead to tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon, the program will be hosted by Andy Klein. He'll be talking with James Hoagland about Juno Pride Week, which launches tomorrow evening. Corey Stennett will be here to highlight next week's workshop for parents and daughters on puberty. We'll get a preview of Saturday's concert performance by Colleen O'Brien and Chris Lee. And cartoonist filmmaker Chad Carpenter will be here to talk about his new film, Moose the Movie, which is showing this weekend at the Gold Town Theater downtown. That's Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more. Live at 3 Monday through Friday on KTOO, and you're hearing a little bit of a preview of tomorrow afternoon's program. Don't forget, we're live on K2 at 3, repeated at 4 o'clock on KRNN, and available on demand via KTOO.org. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling, and we'll be back next week. Quick look at the weather. It will continue with scattered showers and some cloudiness through tomorrow night, when it will decrease to just a chance of rain, which is always good news. Just a slight chance is the kind of vocabulary we're looking for. Saturday, it will get warmer, again with just a chance of rain. Mostly cloudy, but highs will approach 70. By Saturday night, still a slight chance of rain in the evening, but the north wind shifting 10 to 20. Sunday, just partly cloudy with highs around 74, and that good-looking weather continues through Tuesday night. So enjoy your weekend and enjoy the good weather, which is on the way. Thanks for joining us today.